Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Ed Harcourt and it's a lovely chat. We speak about some fantastic records. This is all ahead of Ed's new album, which drops very, very soon. It's all the kind of usual questions. You know what you're going to get with this podcast, but the answers are always fun and interesting and different. Before we get on with this chat, a few thank yous. I want to thank Scroobius Pip and everyone at the Distraction Pieces Network. I'd like to thank the team at the Blue Murder Club podcast. That's a great true crime podcast, and they also produce this episode for you. The big thanks always go to you lot for supporting the podcast. We're heading towards 600 episodes. It's crazy. You know, this was a little thing that I set up on the side of another podcast, and it's grown into being one of the things I love most doing in the week. It's such a joy, and I don't even know if it was before we pressed record or even at the beginning of the episode, but I met Ed way back when he was in a band called Snug, and my band was playing with his band at a festival, and we had a little chat, and my life's been far less glamorous than his since then, but we talk about everything that he's been up to since then. If it's your first time listening to this podcast and you've just headed over to check out the chat with Ed, let me tell you, when you finished today's episode, which you're going to love, why not go and explore that back catalogue? Because like I say, there's over 500 episodes, and if you have a look through, I'm not going to reel them all off because we'll be here forever, but I've spoke to some of the greatest musicians, actors, DJs, producers, comedians on the planet, and they're all there to be enjoyed for free. So just head over to Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe. What you can do as well is support the podcast. And basically, we're currently in the middle of a cost of living crisis. So what I've done is, well, it's 80 pence a month, and then, well, it's a dollar, but I think that converts to about 80p. And then let me tell you what you get for 80p a month, right? You get access to hundreds of episodes that have never been released, loads and loads of radio shows. I reckon there's probably over 100 radio shows to be enjoyed, which is just me playing records and chatting. I mean, I don't know why I felt the need to explain what a radio show is. But I also used to work on a radio station as well, a little independent. And I've got all the shows that I recorded on there. I've put up on the Patreon as well. I've had lots of fun guests on them shows as well. So you can go and listen to all of that. And I do a monthly hangout, a live thing. And we do it over on Zoom. And I ping the link on the Patreon. And it's so nice. I think I've just released one which was recorded a couple of days ago, and there's a lovely gang of people, and we was just discussing artists that begin with the letter C. So we had a wonderful chat talking about The Cure and talking about, oh God, churches and all sorts of bands, and it was lovely. We just chat for an hour, and I'd love more of you to come along. And Yeah, you don't have to have your camera on. You can have your camera off and just, you know, and not be involved, just watching, listening. Or you can get stuck in and it's your opportunity to appear on the podcast. Some of them episodes are available wherever you get your pods, so go and have a listen and see what you're missing out on. And why not just subscribe for a month and spend your 80p, rinse the back catalogue, and then unsubscribe? I mean, I don't recommend that, and I don't think that will happen. I think what will happen is you'll go, this ain't bad for 80p, and stick about. And I hope you do, because I'd love to see you at a live show, and I'd love you to enjoy all the content that goes up each week. I also put all the videos up on Patreon. That's important. So you can go over there and you can watch all of these conversations. You can go and watch me chatting to Ed, absolutely ad-free as well. So that's a lot of bang for you. Your buck, it is, because it's a dollar. So head over to Patreon, that's patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. Or your one-stop shop for everything you need to know is the website, which is Off The Beat And, it's beat and, not beaten, offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right, let's get to it. Please enjoy today's episode of Off The Beat And Track podcast with the delightful Ed Harcourt.
It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Ed, how are you today?
I'm all right. I'm kind of running around like a headless chicken because I'm sort of... We've got two new kittens, so I'm sort of constantly... I'm letting them roam around, but then our third cat, who's now a rather sort of chonky... 6 and a half, he's kind of, we can't have them in the kitchen and it's all a bit like hectic. But on top of that, I'm sort of trying to finish some rough mixes for someone because I record a lot of different random people coming through the studio and then in the wolf cabin, and then yeah, and then just got, I've got my fellow bandmate Cass Brown from Luke Guru. He's in the studio right now. We're working on our second record, so yeah, it's all kind of like just constant juggling a lot of things, which I'm fine with. I quite like it. So.
Lovely. Well, we met many years ago, Ed. You will not remember this at all. But my band played with your band Snug at the Beetle Bug Jam at the Santa Pod Racetrack. Probably, God, 95, maybe 96. No.
Would have been 96 probably, or 97.
Yeah. And
wow. Which band was your band?
We was called Lilo.
And, okay, cool.
Yeah, and so we was all hanging out. I think it was us and Muse, and I can't think of who else was playing. But I'd been buying your CD, so I was looking forward to hanging out with you. So yeah, we have met many moons.
Yeah, ago, my God, that's a long time ago.
Wonderful. Okay.
Back in the day when things were a little simpler.
Oh, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Well, Ed, let's kick off your playlist. I'm going to ask you for track one to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
Okay, so this is a record that I've got two older brothers, and this is a record that my brother had on vinyl. Mm. And for a couple of reasons, really. The second one being quite extreme. The first reason is I remember, you know, when I first started getting into music, I would sort of pilfer their record collection and rifle through all their vinyl records, you know. So they had everything from Jane's Addiction to The Doors to you know, Cream's Clearwater Revival to Beastie Boys to whatever, you know. And I stumbled upon the record Maggot Brain by Funkadelic. And I just remember seeing the cover and thinking, this looks pretty mental. Sort of woman with an afro buried in the dirt.
Yeah.
And so I put it on, and it was kind of like it starts off quite gently, you know, and I was just kind of like, whoa. And then it's just when that lead guitar kicks in, I was like, oh my God, like, you know, just goosebumps on my arms. And I just, it's like, wow, you know, and became quite obsessed with it, really. And but the second reason is that they played at Glastonbury. Hmm. And I think it was 2010. And It was on Sunday, and I'd been there since the Friday. And I have to say, if I'm going to be truly honest, I was a little bit three sheets to the wind.
Yes.
If you, I mean, if I'm going to be honest, I may have been on something hallucinogenic.
Yes.
And we went to the West Holt stage, I think it was. Punkadelic were playing, and they started with that track.
Yeah.
And we sort of went right by the speaker. And then the guitar, and I was kind of like, oh my God, I'm seeing it live. You know, this is amazing. And I'm like, am I allowed to say this on the podcast?
Say whatever you want, brother.
I'm basically tripping my balls off.
There we go.
So I was really tripping. And the guitar solo kicked in and it came out the speaker. And I reacted so violently, I projectile vomited. Against the speaker, like literally against the speaker with loads of people. And I was just like, because the reverberation and the sound of the guitar coming, I was so close to the speaker that it just like physically made me sick. And I just was kind of like, that's my reason for choosing it as the greatest intro, because of the violent reaction that I had to it.
Ed, I've done 512 episodes of this podcast. No one has ever chose a better reason to choose a track than that. That is fantastic, and very much in the spirit of Funkadelic. It's that's pretty fucking crazy, man.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. And weirdly, you know, I remember it as well.
Yeah,
clearly, you know.
Yeah.
So that's my I was thinking about it last night, and you know, there are so many incredible intros. So many, but that one just kind of, it's so epic and it's so long, and it kind of, so it's kind of like, it really, it kind of gives you the sort of, you know, what you want. You get your money for it, you know.
So with that in mind, you said, you know, obviously that's it's about a 9-minute track anyway, but you know, a big part of that is that sort of long intro. You mentioned that, you know, you there's a studio where you are there, and you've had bands coming through and stuff. Yeah. When you first started making music, you know, in a band and as a solo artist, the way that people get their music is way different to how they get it now. And so in regards to sort of intros, you know, we're seeing things like TikTok becoming used in the industry, which is, you know, whatever your thoughts are on it, it is, artists are... heritage artists are now getting their songs reheard because of it, and other generations are getting it. And also, I guess rather than trying to get on the evening session now, it's about getting on the right Spotify playlists and such.
That's very true. Yeah.
So, and I guess that maybe the TikTok thing maybe leans more towards maybe commercial pop music, however you want to look at it. So,
yeah,
where I'm going with this is, as an artist, when either you're writing, and also if you're producing for somebody else, do any of these kind of changes in how people are consuming their music filter through into... Because with the TikTok thing, everything seems to be getting smaller and smaller, quicker and quicker, shorter attention spans. And with Spotify, in a world where you're not just going to a record shop and there's the top 40 singles, there's an infinite amount of music and it's getting heard and getting dragged in.
Yeah.
And so does any of this stuff filter through into your creative process as a songwriter and as a producer?
I would say absolutely not.
Okay.
I would say I'm not aware of it. I'm sort of in my own world. And, you know, like yesterday I was recording Richard Strange, who was in the Doctors of Madness, and a piano player called Clifford Slapper, who's a fantastic
name.
Yeah, brilliant name. Brilliant guy. And, you know, we recorded them, and I had him on the Baby Grand and Richard on guitar as singing, and everything was live in the same room with all the bleed and all the noise. And it sounds beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I will work with some artists where we'll be kind of like working on the song production wise. And they'll be like, oh, I think we should have a breakdown here. It's quite kind of pop. And I'll be like, okay, you know, I'm not going to limit myself. I'm not going to be sort of holy India the now snob. I'm just not aware of it. I'm not aware of TikTok. I totally understand that playlists on Spotify matter, but I'm not going to change how I make music because of a medium that kind of promotes ADHD. You know, I just, yeah. I think, you know, people deserve better. And just because that's, you know, those platforms exist, it doesn't mean that you should change your music. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like things to be snappy. And I like, I'll turn off my email. Sorry. I like things to be snappy and get to the point, you know, but if a song warrants, like Maggot Brain, you know, a sort of 4-minute intro, then so be it.
Absolutely.
I think you have to follow the whim and the muse of the song and how it sort of reveals itself. And you're kind of like, you're just along for the ride, really. So you could try and tame it, but, you know.
Yeah. No one's ever heard 30 seconds of a song on TikTok and projectile vomited. Ever.
No, well, hopefully, maybe I'll try and create something that could do that. Kind of like, I think I'd have to get some sort of like shepherd tones and brown notes, you know, proper sub harmonic.
Yeah.
You certainly get, maybe kind of get things rumbling in the stomach, you know,
yeah.
and then maybe some really high pitched sort of white and pink noise and just kind of combine all the, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see. I'll work on it. That'll be my next sort of raison d'etre for the rest of 2024.
Okay. Ed, I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Yeah, so it was when I was about 18, and it was the opening track to Closing Time by Tom Waits. It was All 55. And so basically I got really into Tom Waits around the time I was writing songs on the piano because, you know, I'd been in Snug playing bass mainly, but I'm a piano player, so I sort of heard him, and I heard Randy Newman, and I heard Harry Nilsson, and all these different 70s singer-songwriters, when they started in the 60s, 70s, but I heard Closing Time, and then listened to Tom Waits' whole back catalogue, and sort of chronologically, but that was the first song that I heard, and the sort of opening chords, and it's just so melancholy and wistful. I think the word is, I believe it's like saudade. I think it's like an Arabic word, and it means something that's very melancholy or sad that makes you feel happy and warm. So it's just had that, I don't know. Yeah. Just, and my daughter sort of, when she was really young, used to sing, she knew all the words to that song. So when she, I didn't even kind of prompt her to learn it. She started singing along. Whenever I played it on the record player, she'd sing along, and then she knew all the words.
Yeah.
She doesn't know them now, but when she was about 3, and that was also sort of doubly emotional. Sort of,
yeah, of course.
And just wonderful and a sort of gorgeous moment, you know, for me.
To be 15, I mean, the aforementioned, the Randy Newman's, I understand that's quite easy for a young lad to get into. Tom Waits is pretty heavy stuff, isn't it, for a young lad? It's pretty abrasive in many places. Like, yeah. What was it that kind of struck you about?
Well, I think Waits? You know, I think it was the period between sort of 1972 and 1981. I guess was 82. That was his kind of romantic barfly. Beatnik, Bukowski, Utra, if he was homeless, kind of. That was his sort of, you know, a decade of those records. They certainly had a certain thread running through them that was very, very beautiful and romantic and dark and melancholy. But his voice had changed over time, probably through excess and drinking and disenchantment with the music industry, and I think him and Springsteen started out at the same time, and Springsteen sort of went stratospheric, and Tom Waits just kind of, but it wasn't until the 80s, you know, that he completely changed his sound and went much more sort of, you know, junkyard beat.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Part, lots of mad instruments from around the world, and we're much more surreal, and so that's, I would say that's probably the more abrasive. He's actually become more abrasive as he got older, which is something to aspire to. I think that's fantastic, you know, because it's a bit like Bowie as well, you know, just kind of constantly, Bowie. I never know how you're meant to say it, but you know, just constantly kind of trying to push the boundaries and objectively think out of the box and do something different, you know.
Yeah.
So that's inspiring. But it was that first initial song on his debut album that, you know, just that really kind of got me.
Yeah. Where was growing up, and was home a musical environment?
So it wasn't that musical. I was sort of the only musician in my home. But I started playing music when I was 9, and my mother noticed that I was just constantly kind of quite restless and banging stuff quite rhythmically, and got me learning the piano. And then I just sort of started picking up instruments when I was about 14. But we did have music playing in the home. So my dad's really into classical music. He was in the army, but he likes jazz, but he has a few sort of folk records, and he also was really into Ravi Shankar, so he used to play lots of Ravi Shankar. And then my mum had all like Johnny Cash and the Beatles, and so we had those. And it was mainly my brother's record collection. But as far as music, we listened to music a lot, and my parents were really, especially my mother, was very sort of encouraging. So,
yeah,
I had a place to read music at university, but I sold my soul to rock and roll. I remember my father saying, you know, he kind of said, you know, why don't you want to go and read music? And I just said, well, I'm not too keen on analyzing it. I'd rather create it.
So, yeah. Do you stand by that to this day?
I do. Yeah. I'm not very, I'm not great at analyzing things. I don't like to dissect things. I just like to sort of make things and then move on.
Yeah.
I think, you know, because it's just always, every song is a reaction to the last one, and you write the song, and then I work quite quickly, so I just like to sort of write it and then move on to the next.
Yeah. Let's stay in the formative years and tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please, Ed.
Yeah, so actually that ties into when I formed my first proper band, which was Snug, and we formed at school, and we were really into Nirvana and Weezer and Green Day, who we ended up supporting, which was pretty mad. And but actually one song that I remember we just played a lot, and we used to do these like shows at school, and we'd make a poster and put it up in the dining hall, and they used to, the rugby team used to put up the poster for come and see the first 15, you know, and we'd like put the poster over the top, and then I'd sort of almost get the shit kicked out of me by a massive you know, rugger bugger jock type fellow. So yeah, that was quite interesting. But the song that we played so much was Undone, the Sweater Song by Weezer. So yeah, it was kind of like, and I was playing bass, so it's like ding 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 ding. Yeah, it was just like, yeah. And then I just remember, I don't know why, it's just like that's the song that we played like so many times. It's like,
yeah,
it's like completely etched in my sort of muscle memory.
Yeah. It's a great single.
It's an amazing song. Yeah. It's a great, you know, what a great band. You know, I love so much of what they've done. And I love the Okay Human record, actually.
Yeah.
They did with the sort of orchestra. But yeah, that was just a huge. And then we went to Japan in, I think, 2000 and played some Sonic Festival with Weezer and Green Day. I mean, so we were there with like our heroes, like, you know, playing the same festival. It was crazy.
And to give that some context, like, how old was you then?
So I would have been, I think I was like 22.
Yeah, I mean, that's fucking crazy, isn't it?
It's mad. Yeah,
we
signed to Warner's when I was like 18.
Yeah.
So I had my, and then, you know, we got dropped after like three singles, and then I just, you we all got pretty disenchanted. But around the time we went to Japan in 2000, literally that's when I signed to EMI for my own career. So I was in a hotel room in like Tokyo, and I got a fax sort of shoved through under my door that was my contract that I had to sign.
Wow.
Pretty bad. I had to fax back my contract from Japan. But, you know, it was, but then before that I'd been, you know, I was quite amazing to be disillusioned with the music industry at the age of 19.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, because I sort of worked as a chef for 2 years. I was a sous chef, you know. But that gave me time to kind of sort of kick back and start writing songs for myself.
I mean, to have a record deal at 18 and, you know, you said about performing at school and stuff, was you a confident kid?
I think yes and no. I think I was, because I moved around a lot, like every 2 years, I was able to adapt. So I kind of like knew how to make friends quite quickly and easily.
Was that because your dad was in the military?
Yeah. So I was always like moving around when I was a kid. And so I kind of would make friends quite easily, and I was quite gregarious. But I think underneath all that, I'm actually quite, so no one ever agrees with me on this, but I feel like I'm quite shy. Mm. I go quite quiet in social situations, and I don't know what to say. But I think a lot of it is like, I have this drive that's like this kind of, maybe it's from performing on stage. It's kind of, I'm not putting on a personality, but I sort of have this, I don't like awkward silences. I don't know. Maybe I'm like a social loner or something.
Yeah. I mean, the confidence aside, like you mentioned drive there, where's it come from? What drives you?
I don't know. I think, you know, writing songs, making music, there's a drive to connect with the world, with human beings. There's a total drive to relate, but there's also a drive within myself to better myself and to learn and to just try and make great art, I guess, in a way, in a fashion, you know. But there's definitely a sort of insatiable hunger to just keep moving forward and keep making music. And sometimes I feel like I burn out a little bit from doing it, and I just need to, I think, I need to calm down a bit. I mean, you know, I get distracted quite easily.
How do you know when you are sort of hitting burnout? Like what are, I mean, apart from you just mentioned that you get distracted easily, what are the signals, and are they things that you're aware of now and you kind of
it's
go,
like, right? This really weird experience feeling when you know that you've written something great, if you really, or good. It literally comes out of nowhere. I've always said this, it's like this otherworldly sort of experience where just the words and the melody just kind of form, and they're just suddenly there. And I've got, like, if I showed people my notebooks, there's some songs literally that I've recorded that's just like that, no crossing out, no editing. And admittedly, when I hear some of my older lyrics, sometimes I'm a bit like, you could have worked on that a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But so I'm much more of an editor now. But it's kind of interesting how, I think maybe that might have been, I was such a massive fan of like the whole Beatnik scene, you know, with Jack Kerouac and William Burroughs and stuff like that. And when I read that Kerouac used to just have a massive roll of paper, and he'd just have it attached to the typewriter, and he just would just write completely sort of gut instinct, you know, just whatever came into his head, he would write it, and there wouldn't be really any editing. It was kind of this flow, sort of, what's the word?
Flow of consciousness.
Yes, that's the word, sorry. The flow of consciousness, they just kind of just streamed, you know, and I think I sort of appreciated that because there's an aspect of writing and recording that is kind of like, if you think about it too much, if you start to know the song too well, then I don't think you're going to get your best performance or your best writing. I think it has to kind of really just, you have to sort of expel it.
Yeah.
And then look at it later, you know, and be like, actually, just let's take that out and add this. And I think that's the best way to create it. Rather than being analytical and sort of very meticulous and taking your time. And you know, and a lot of people like that. It becomes very sort of clinical and technical, you know.
Absolutely. Tell me the first song you bought from a record shop.
Well, this is a difficult one because I'm not sure. And I wanted to, originally, so like in the 80s, I went through a very small phase of buying novelty vinyl. So like I had like loads of money, Harry Enfield. I had Stutter Rap by Morrison Minors.
So somebody dropped Stutter Rap last week on this very podcast.
No way. That's amazing.
It was Mark Gardner from Ride.
That's amazing. I just remember it so clearly. And I just was like, and I, you know, I love the Beastie Boys as well, but I was just kind of like, this is hilarious. So I went out and bought it. And I had that and loads of money. I think I had I Want Your Love Transvision Band. Mm-hmm. But then I think the first sort of cassette that I had was Queen's Greatest Hits.
Mm.
And the first song that I would say the first song for me, it would be Killer Queen by you. Yeah. So, I mean, just so amazing. I love Queen. I bought, you know, I'm not shy about saying that.
Yeah. What is it you love about Queen?
Well, first of all, the songs, some of the songs are just unbelievably amazing. Melody-wise, Freddie Mercury's Way with the Melody is just off the scale. I love the way they sound as well. Like, the production on some of them just sounds so, still sounds so, like, fresh and clean and, you know. I just kind of, the showmanship, I think, of Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. And the sort of the pomp and the grandeur, you know, or the bounce of delusional grandeur. Call it. I just, you know, but I think Killer Queen just sounds, you know, as soon as it kicks in, just it still sounds fresh to this day to me. Steve Gullick, the photographer, and I share a very mutual love of Queen. We're always talking about them.
Love it.
So, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your relationship, if there was one, with a record shop. Was buying records and hanging out in record shops ever part of your life growing up?
So it was more like when I lived in London, I used to go to the Notting Hill record exchange all the time. Mm. So I got a lot of records from them, especially when I started getting into Tom Waits when I was 18. I just went in there and I was like, oh my God, they had like everything. So I just bought all everything on vinyl. And then, they'd have like a lot of cool 45s and a lot of punk and a lot of great hip hop as well. And that was kind of my main record store really that I went to. Bought a lot of records. Now I live in Oxfordshire and my local Oxfam is like insane. It's got amazing records. There must be someone who's just like this sort of record pimp who just kind of keeps dropping obscure. I went in there, they had like a bootleg can vinyl.
Oh, you know, God, really?
Yeah, from like 1974. They had like Noi. They had like Roberta Flack first take on vinyl. Bob Dylan. Like, yeah, they have like so much stuff. Like really weird, rare stuff. And some of it's like £50. Some of it's £20. But then there'll be like original records going for like £9.99. I don't really know what's going on. But because I have I don't know if you can see it, but I have a jukebox.
Oh, no. Love it.
Just there. And it's a Rockola from 1973. So I put, I collect 45s and put, sort of swap them around. I make the little strips and put them in.
Yeah, love it.
So it's kind of like I've got like now about like 300 45s just sitting there, and it's an ever revolving. And I've got everything from NWA to Sparkle Horse to Sam Cooke to whatever, you know.
Oh. Perfect.
So it's kind of like we're big on vinyl. Well, I am in this house. So that's kind of what I love about vinyl is, you know, it makes you listen to the whole record. You know, you put it on and you're forced. No one ever really gets up and tries to find the sort of groove of the next song. They just kind of let it play.
Yeah,
and I think that's the beauty of it.
And a lot of the time, you then pick the sleeve up and look at it, and
right.
You don't get that on Spotify. You don't get that on your phone when you look at a little bit of artwork.
I think you might be able to see the credits now on Spotify. That was due to, I think there was like credit where it was a campaign called Credit Where Credit's Due, I think. But that's so important, you know, to know how. I think TikTok as well. I think James Blake is right in saying that, you know, it's created a sort of a generation that they think it's okay that music's free, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, now Universal have sort of taken off. They've taken off 80% of TikTok, haven't they?
Yeah.
They've removed it. So it doesn't really affect me. So I'm kind of like, what? Sorry, I'm busy here, like, playing my weird old organ in the wolf cabin. Well, that sounds a bit rude. But, you know,
yeah. All right, well, let's move forward a little bit to track five, and it's the song that soundtracked your years going out clubbing.
So, like, I'm not really a clubber, but this is quite random. When I was at school, we used to listen to quite a lot of drum and bass, and so my friends had some decks, and we used to listen to Goldie quite a lot and LTJ Bookham and Inner City Life by Goldie. I remember having that on the decks and trying to mix between the two different drum and bass records and being absolutely rubbish. But then I went to see Chemistry and Storm in Brixton when I was quite young, in the sort of 1997.
Yeah.
And that was pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So it was kind of the Metalheads and Goldie and that whole kind of... So I chose Inner City Life because that's kind of like the biggest song from that era.
Yeah. And it still sounds so good, man.
It sounds amazing. Yeah, it's incredible. And I think, you know, drum and bass is kind of like, it's never really gone away, you know?
No, not at all.
It's always still, it's a bit like a mullet, you know?
Good chat.
It's just, it's never, you know?
Yeah.
It's just always been there. And it's not always been there. But, you know, it's incredible to also hear was it Goldie? I think he was talking about how he stumbled upon making the beat for Inner City Life. It was a mistake or something. He sped it up by mistake and he was like, oh, you know, there's something in this. But it just, it's fantastic. So that's, I haven't done a huge amount of clubbing, I got to be honest.
Yeah.
But,
I've got my quote, mate. I've got my quote. Ed Harcott says, drum and bass is a bit like a mullet.
Oh, no. No, I'm going to get... It's going to be like a sort of an extreme drum and bass. It's going to warm my head on a plate. This is going to haunt me. I can feel it.
Love it. Love it. Well, look, I'm going to take you home, and I'm interested as to what you're going to call home. Is it home now? Because for somebody that moved around so much, as you said about earlier, I'm going to ask you for track six for a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Well, I'm going to choose the home county that I live in now, which is Oxfordshire.
I mean, you've got some beauties to choose from there, mate.
I know, it was a difficult one because some incredible. But I'm going to choose this one because they're my friends, and it's called "By the Fuzz" by Supergrass. So
it's a track.
And Danny Goffey's, you know, he's like one of my best friends. And Gaz, Gaz lives like 10 minutes from me. So we meet up sometimes and I've talked with them a lot and we've just like known each other for a long time. But every time I hear that song, I'm just kind of like, yeah. And I've seen it live like 30 times and it's still always amazing. And you know, Danny's a great songwriter. You know, he wrote that. Him and Gaz, incredible songwriters and musicians. And I feel very kind of, I actually, you know, started hanging out with them and became their friends because I was such a huge fan of Supergrass growing up, you know, in the 90s. So it was kind of like, whoa, you know, like, sort of, this is really weird. We just kind of, our paths have crossed a lot and that song never fails to put a smile on my face.
The energy that record has is
incredible.
It's ridiculous. It's like it's almost like someone had reworked and reinvented like the early Madness records. It's just like it's got that urgency, that social commentary, and that sort of that youth about it. It's so exciting.
It's great. It's good. It's got that. It's also got that element of some, you know, teenage kicks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Or Buzzcocks, you know.
Yeah.
It's got that same kind of like teenage urgency. Yeah, it's one of the best songs
ever. Just a complete story as well.
It's so
from
perfect.
Start to finish.
That's what I mean. It's so perfect as well. Like and it's so short and like, you know, but it's, you know, it does everything that you need.
Yeah.
In the space of like 2.5 minutes or whatever.
It was absolutely, I was really lucky. Like, they used to do these things. Gary Crowley used to put these gigs on in London. I can't think what the show was called that he used to present. And I think The Beat or something like that. And you'd get to see like sort of three bands for like about £8. And you get to see like, this is obviously in the sort of early to mid 90s. And you get to see like Suede stuff. But one night there was this band and these kids walked out. And it was like, who's this? And it's like, oh, they're called the Jennifers. And like,
oh, yeah.
And I was like, and then literally, couple of years later, hearing Caught by the Fuzz, I was like, fuck, that's that dude from that band that was like literally looked about 14 when he was on the stage. Like, oh, superb. That first Supergrass record, he's just absolutely rammed with just pop gems. Yeah. It's fantastic.
It's amazing records. I think they're all doing their own thing now, so that time has come. But you know, who knows? Maybe they'll make another one. But I don't think they'd be able to make another record like that because it's just of such a time in their lives, you know.
Of course.
But I think actually Danny and I are we might do some music together in the next few weeks. So he's going to come over here and we're going to...
Oh, amazing.
It'll be interesting because we're both such different songwriters, you know.
Yeah.
It might work, it might not. We'll see.
I mean, you've been bigging up Danny as a songwriter, but fuck me. Like, what an underrated drummer. Ridiculous.
He's incredible. Yeah, we played together in Paris. We did Sergeant Pepper's.
Yeah.
The whole album at the Philharmonie in Paris, two shows in one day. And
can you talk about that a little bit more? Because there was quite a few people involved in that, wasn't
there? Yeah, it was Pete and Carl from the Libertines, Steve Mason from the Beta Band, and then we had Paul Kelly on bass from the Coral, Lil Barry on guitar, and then we had strings, including my wife and some of my family and some brass players
I mean, that's some lineup, right?
It was pretty amazing. It was really amazing. And it was kind of like it was difficult. The first show went without a hitch, but the second show was a little bit dare I say Pete might have been a little I don't know how to put it really.
Yeah.
It was sort of on a different cloud.
That place where you was at when you threw up, yeah?
Yeah, I'd say probably, on the same platform as that kind of, just kind of just 1 degree away from the vomiting, I don't think. But you know what? It was really quite a special day. And just loved the rehearsals. It was so much fun. It's quite a kind of big thing to do, the whole of Sergeant Pepper's live, you know.
Yeah,
but we really went for it. And after the first show, I had a woman come up to me and she was like, I saw the Beatles in the 60s and I love Sergeant Pepper's and you really did it justice, you know. So I was kind of like, oh, thank God, you know.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's sort of holy sacred ground, you know. But so anyway, Danny was playing drums on that, and we of course I got him to do with a little help from my friends, you know, whilst doing the drums, and he smashed it, you know.
Yeah.
He absolutely smashed it. Although, you know, he looks more like Paul McCartney than Ringo.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, this is your last track, and this is where you get to be a bit of a tastemaker. And it's a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear, please, Ed.
Well, this is a song from, I think, the 60s. Or 70s, I don't know when it's from, but it's a song that, it's very much like when I was on Heavenly Records, it's a Heavenly favorite that we always used to play at about sort of, I'd always hear it about 3 a.m. when we were having a party in the Heavenly offices. And it's called Wichita Tide Toe by Harper's Bazaar. Do you know it?
No.
It's really quite psychedelic and magical and weird. And it's got, I'd had no idea what they're singing about. And there's like bicycle bells, like sort of going throughout the whole song. It's quite something. And it just seems to be a record that everyone at Heavenly was obsessed with. And we just listened to a lot. And but it's kind of like every time I've mentioned it to anyone, they don't know who, they've never heard of it. But it seems to be this song that kind of was within a circle of people that everyone was obsessed with. And yeah, so that's my final number that I think people should hear. It's quite weird. It's quite dreamy and ethereal and odd and 60s psychedelia, you know.
We make it easy for people to go and make their mind up on that track, because that, alongside all the other tracks that we talk about, we put together a little Spotify playlist.
Oh, brilliant.
The pod. So people go and enjoy all of them. And obviously we'll put your music on there as well. And we've been talking about everybody else's music. So let's talk about what you're up to.
Yeah, so I've got a record coming out at the end of March. Doing lots of in-stores, and yeah, so I'm sort of gearing up for that really for the rest of the year. And I'm off to do a month-long US tour with the Afghan Whigs and the Church.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so like, and Greg Dooley, who's a good friend, one of my really good friends, is we sing a duet on the new album, and Catherine Williams, the singer, is doing some BVs, and I also do a duet with a great singer from Bristol. She's called Stevie Parker. And yeah, you know, so it's called El Magnifico, and I made it in the Wolf Cabin, recorded the strings in the local church after bribing the vicar. And made it, a lot of it with Dave Azumi Lynch down in Eastbourne, who I work with. And it's a sort of, you know, again, as always, a labor of love.
Yeah.
But it's coming out of my label Deathless. So I've sort of done a deal with Integral, and I've got my own little kind of imprint with them. So Deathless is one of the songs on the record. And but other than that, I'm going to be I've also got a kind of few sort of, I'm getting to film composition, so I'm doing, you know, I'm kind of really getting into that world, and I absolutely love writing music for film. So yeah, that's, I feel like hopefully that's, if I can get my foot in the door of Hollywood,
yeah,
that's my objective. Yeah.
Wonderful. And so there's some in-stores. Is there going to be a UK tour?
Yeah, there'll be a UK. I'm playing the Ramblin' Roots Review in High Wycombe on April 6th. And before that and around that, I've got like in-store at Banquet Records on the 8th. And then I'm playing like Edinburgh, Liverpool, Leeds, Oxford, Truck, Resident in Brighton.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to be driving myself around with a piano, with an electric piano, and
love it.
Kind of rocking up. And I think I may have a show on the 28th in Glasgow as well on my own. So,
and if people want to keep up the speed with all of this, as to where they can see releases and such, where's the best place to start up to speed with you, mate?
I guess probably my Instagram is the best place, because I'm rubbish. I'm really rubbish at trying to updating stuff. I need like a PA or a micromanager or something. I'm not very... I do try.
Yeah.
I have a website. It's edarcourtmusic.com. So I do update that sometimes. So I'll probably put the dates up on that.
Fantastic. Well, look, we'll take you in here on the socials when we drop this episode. So if people aren't following you already, then they can do so. And we'll put the web address in the show notes so people can go and check out the site. Ed, it's been lovely having a chat with you, mate.
Thanks so much
for giving up your time and coming on to Talk Records, mate.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Nice to, you know, reconnect after whatever, 28 years.
Wonderful. I'm going to press stop, but don't go anywhere.
Okay.
There you have it. Oh, what a glorious gentleman Ed was. I feel the urge to go and projectile vomit over a speaker. I mean, I'm recording this intro on a Friday, and I'll be going to the toothbrush tonight to run me night, and... yeah, I think that's the benchmark now, isn't it, of like, how involved in music can you get? How can you be that moved by music that you literally projectile vomit? That is quite some statement. What a way to kick off the podcast as well. So thanks again to Ed for giving up his time. Go check out the new record and go check out the back catalogue as well, because Ed's put out so much great stuff. And try and get along to one of them in stores. As I mentioned at the beginning, please support the podcast. If you can't afford the 80 pence a month, that's cool. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Drop us a little message. I'm really active on Instagram. Just search Off the Beaten Track, and give us a follow on there and drop us a message. Let us know what you thought of the show. Let us know you'd like to hear me chat to, and I will therefore reach out and try and get them on the show. Head over to patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack and support the show. I'm back next time. In the meantime, be nice to each other. I'll see you soon. Bye bye.